Thank you again, Mr. Stein, and we'll go back in now to the second portion of the service. So once we have looked at and shown that there is a place of safety, and it is a particular place, now we're going to come to how the church will flee. Now it's one of those things where you say, well, if we don't know where we're going, how do we know how we're going to get there? Some have pictured, again, Hawaii as the place of safety and flying on a jumbo jet, taking a first-class flight to a tropical island. Nice try. It's not likely to happen. Others have pictured going to separate locations, everybody just going to wherever God led them, all over the world, and hunkering down wherever all of these little pockets or groups of people. Is that what God's word says? And does God give us any direction as to how the church will flee to a place of safety? I'm going to start out today by looking at the deliverance of the children of Israel. And we know it's not always the case, but in so many cases, history repeats itself. We know that what has happened in the past often repeats itself in the future. And again, that was one of the reasons why Mr. Armstrong thought Petra was very likely a place of safety, because it has been in the past. So I want to look at the children of Israel and the history of the children of Israel. And I'll go through looking at the Exodus, because you have a massive group of people who are walking out of Egypt. Let's go to Exodus chapter 19. Exodus chapter 19. I've given a similar message to this in the past, but it has been quite some time, and I thought it very timely to think about the place of safety and to think about fleeing, and what do we know from Scripture about what God tells us. And I thought, well, it's good especially to go back and look at history. Historically, how has God protected? How has God nourished? How has God led his people? Exodus 19 and verse 1. In the third month, when the children of Israel were gone forth out of the land of Egypt, the same day they came they into the wilderness of Sinai. So here they're in the wilderness. Now, if you think wilderness means, oh, it's mountains and beautiful streams and trees. Remember, the scapegoat was also sent into the wilderness, which means a desolate place. So they were in the wilderness, for they were departed from Rephidim and were coming to the desert of Sinai, and had pitched in the wilderness, and there in Israel they camped before the mount. And Moses went up to God, and the Lord called him out of the mountain, saying, thus shall you say to the house of Jacob, and tell the children of Israel, you have seen what I did to the Egyptians, and how I bare you on eagle's wings, and brought you unto myself. That's a bold statement of God telling us who he is. He said, I bore you on eagle's wings. I protected you. I am the one who delivered you. He's telling us that he is the one who brought them out. And how were the children of Israel led out of Egypt? On eagle's wings. Well, we know that God performed many miracles, and so many miracles that we look at them and we go, how could the children of Israel forget the miracles that took place and forget how God brought them out? But they did. Exodus 13 says, but God led the people about through the wilderness of the Red Sea, and the children of Israel went up harnessed out of the land of Egypt. Now, you could read that translation and say they were led out of Egypt, harnessed. And you think, well, they're still slaves, or they're still tied up somehow, or maybe they're pulling wagons. No, the word harnessed means able-bodied or armed. So they were slaves just weeks prior, and now they're coming out armed or able-bodied. They're coming out with the strength and the energy and the vitality that they needed. I want to look at the challenges that they faced. Going into a wilderness, going into the desert, They faced not having food. And of course, they said, did you bring us here to die? They didn't have water, and yet water came forth from a rock. They were entrapped, especially when they came to the Red Sea. They thought, there's no way of escape. There's no way of getting out of this. And we'll cover that. We move forward. It was an uprising, Korah's rebellion, and God delivered them through that. There was a cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night. It was very obvious that God was with them, that he was the one leading them. They walked 40 years. And in fact, Nehemiah 9 says they had made, after they had made a molten calf, they said, this is our God that brought us out of Egypt, and had great provocations. He said, we had difficult times. Yet you, in your manifold mercies, forsook them not in the wilderness. He said, you didn't leave the people even when they did something like that. He said, the pillar of cloud departed not from them by day and led them in the way, neither but the pillar of fire by night to show them light and the way to where they were supposed to go. You gave also a good spirit to instruct them. They were taught. It wasn't just God fed them and gave them water and they were on their own. It says, you instructed them, and you did not withhold manna from their mouth, and you gave them water for their thirst. Yes, 40 years you did sustain them in the wilderness, and so that they lacked nothing. Some have said, well, we know it's not Petra because there's no facilities there. There's no places to stay in. It's just rocks and dens. Well, the children of Israel went out in the desert, and God is saying here, he provided everything they needed. I remember years ago when they started building condominiums in Jordan, people said, ah, I know why they're building the condominiums. It's for us to come and live in during the Great Tribulation. Now, 20 or 30 years later, those condominiums probably aren't in too good a shape, but I don't think they were built for us anyway. So he says, for 40 years he led them, and he says, their clothes did not grow old, and their feet did not swell. How many of you have gone hiking for any short distance at all, and he says, their feet didn't swell after 40 years of walking or hiking. So God provided for them. He took care of them. It says he nourished them. Does this start to sound a little bit familiar when he says, I will protect my people in a place of safety, into her place, and they are nourished for 3.5 years. I want to read from a daily Bible verse blog. This is back in 2012. A psalm, Sabbath psalm of praise, hide me under the shadow of your wings. And the reason I want to cover this is because we see the description here of how God led and protected and nursed the children of Israel when they left Egypt. It's from Psalms 17, verse 7. Show your marvelous loving kindness by your right hand, O you who save those who trust in you and those who rise up against them. Keep me as the apple of your eye and hide me under the shadow of your wings. He said, hide me under the shadow of your wings. It says God loves his people and protects them carefully and lovingly as a person protects the eye, protects his eye, and as the hen protects her chicks. Jesus Christ also used the analogy to describe his love for Jerusalem. How often I wanted to gather you, your children together as a hen gathers her chicks under her wing, but you were not willing. It says of loving kindness because he says, show your marvelous loving kindness. Loving kindness is a significant term for God's loyal love, and it's enhanced by the Hebrew term marvelous, a word used in the Bible with only reference to God. It said there's only this type of particular love that can be shown, and it's by God. And God was showing this to his people. Let's go to Deuteronomy chapter 32. Deuteronomy chapter 32 and at verse 7. Deuteronomy 32 and verse 7. Remember the days of old. Consider the years of many generations. Ask your father and he will show you, your elders and they will tell you. When the Most High divided the nations, their inheritance, when he separated the sons of Adam, he set the bounds of the people according to the number of the children of Israel. For the Lord's portion is his people. Jacob is the lot of the inheritance. And again, it's an important reason why we need to know who Jacob is, who the children of Israel are. It says the Lord's portion is his people. He found him in the desert land and in the waste, or in that waste howling wilderness, and he led him about, he instructed him as the apple of his eye. As an eagle stirs up her nest, flutters over her young, spreads abroad her wings, and takes them and bears them on her wings. Now again, we're reading about the children of Israel. We're reading about how God showed his love towards them and how God led them out. Verse 12, it says, so the Lord alone did lead them. There was no strange God with them. It wasn't because of a calf, a golden calf. It says, God alone led them. I want to read from Jameson Fawcett Brown, as an eagle flutters over her young. It says, this beautiful expressive metaphor is founded on the extraordinary care and attachment of the female eagle as she cherishes her young. When her newly fledged progeny are sufficiently advanced to soar in their native element, she, in her first attempts at flying, or at their first attempts at flying rather, supports them on the tip of her wing, encouraging, directing, and aiding their feeble efforts to longer and sublimer flights. Now, to take them under the wing, as it says, as an eagle flutters over her young, is a description of encouraging, directing, and aiding, which God says he does for his people. So did God take the most tender and powerful care for his chosen people. He carried them out of Egypt. He led them through the horrors of the wilderness into the promised land. And again, we know and should remember that and should continue to remember so that we do not forget. Isaiah chapter 40. Isaiah chapter 40 and verse 28. Isaiah chapter 40. And verse 28. Have you not known, have you not heard, that the everlasting God, the Lord, the creator of the ends of the earth, faints not, neither is he weary, and there is no searching of his understanding. He gives power to the faint. Now, they were slaves in Egypt. They were beaten. They were forced to produce and to build, and yet when they left, they were able-bodied. He gives power to the faint, and to them that have no might, he increases their strength. Now, some have looked at it and they said, I hope we flee soon because I'm getting older and my body can't move very well. I remember watching as a child, the children of Israel, as they left Egypt in the movie, Ten Commandments. And you have all these older ladies that have packs or they're pulling something, and some of them are up on carts. Here God says he gives power to the faint, and to them who have no might, he increases their strength. You don't have to worry that, I've got a bum leg, or I've got bad knees, I may not be able to flee. God will give strength and increase strength in those who don't have it. Even the youth shall faint and be weary, but the young men utterly fall, but they that wait upon the Lord. Now this is where we go back where he says, seek first the kingdom and his righteousness. Those who hold fast to what they've been taught and what they have been given. He said, they that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength and shall mount up with wings as eagles. They shall run and not be weary, and they shall walk and not faint. God says, I'm going to provide you what you need when you need to be able to escape. Are each of us going to be given a set of wings? It says, they shall mount up as with wings of eagles. We can laugh, but there are some in the world who believe that, and they think we're given wings, or that we fly off with wings. There's also others who believe, well, you get wings, but it's not till you go to heaven. then you're given wings, and then you float around heaven and you can fly with these wings on your back. Again, it's not talking about literal eagle's wings. Some say, well, no, it's talking about an airplane. That they shall mount up with wings of eagles, that means we are going to have to fly. So it can't be anywhere in the United States. And they don't think about, well, what about people in other parts of the world? Or what about the people who in the church that live in the Middle East? Do they get to fly as well? Or do they not get eagle's wings? But people have proven, quote unquote, to themselves that it is a jumbo jet. That's how God's people flee. We all get on jumbo jets and fly somewhere. Or does it simply mean that we are given protection and guidance that only God can deliver, as a mother eagle would care for and guide her young? We see the description of deliverance. We're looking at how the children of Israel were delivered. And like the children of Israel, we will be given deliverance as well. And God will make available what we need. God will show us what we need. Revelation chapter 12. Revelation chapter 12. And verse 12. Therefore rejoice, you heavens, and you that dwell in them. Woe to the inhabitants of the earth and of the sea, for the devil has come down to you having great wrath, for he knows he has but a short time. Now, we covered this verse in the first part, in looking at a place of safety and God providing a place of protection. I would have to say we are very close to this time. It says, knowing that Satan knows he has a short time and he goes after the church. I would say at least we're at the beginning of it. Verse 13, and when the dragon saw that he was cast to the earth, he persecuted the woman. Well, if he knows he has a short time, when is this persecution going to come against the church? And we've already been seeing some of that. It said the dragon was cast to the earth, he persecuted the woman which brought forth the man child. And again, knowing that the symbol of a woman means a church. And the Greek word for woman here actually can be translated specifically a wife or a woman. And again, when Christ calls the church the bride of Christ, a bride that he's preparing, it is his bride, it is the church or the woman. Verse 14, and to the woman, to the church, were given two wings of a great eagle. And people look at this and they say, see, two wings of a great eagle that she might fly into the wilderness. Now, some have said, well, that definitely proves it. It's not just metaphorically speaking. There, we're going to go on a jumbo jet and we're going to fly to the wilderness, into her place where she is nourished for times, times, and a half a time. Does it say that we fly in an airplane to a place of safety? No. And again, we have to be very careful not to read things in. And it's likely we will have to travel in some way to get wherever we're at. I'm not saying it's not an airplane. I'm just saying it says two wings of a great eagle. Young's analytical concordance concurs with other words in the dictionaries that the word here, petomaya or petomai, means to fly or to spread the wings. But just because it says eagle's wings does not mean that we fly on an airplane. We saw from the example of the children of Israel, and there's a reason why I wanted to give that example of them fleeing and how they left. It says they were carried out on the wings of an eagle. But the children of Israel didn't fly on a jumbo jet. It doesn't say they flew over the desert for 40 years and their shoes didn't wear out. They walked. It was a physical effort. And God provided them the energy and the strength they needed, but it says they were carried out on the wings of an eagle. And here it says to God's people, they too will be given two wings of a great eagle. In other words, they will be protected, they will be led, they will be cared for and delivered. So on eagle's wings is symbolic of God's protection. It means they're going to be given safety and protection, they're going to be given sustenance, their basic needs will be taken care of, and that God will provide what they need. Revelation 12:6 says, the woman fled into the wilderness where she had a place prepared by God. It's not a place prepared by man. It's not something physically that we've set up. It's not, well, I've got a storehouse of things for the next 3 years. But if you can't take that with you, you can't put your faith and dependence on that. What does the word nourish mean? It says, where, so that he might nourish her 1,260 days. You look at 1,260 days, that's 3.5 years, or time times and a half of times. And again, where you make that connection across scripture. So what does nourish mean? Strong's Concordance says this word nourish is a Greek word, trepho, a T-R-E-P-H-O, trepho. And it comes from a word that means to strengthen, the idea of properly to stiffen or fatten, or to cherish with food, to pamper, to rear, to bring up, to feed, to nourish. So this word where he says he nourishes her, he feeds her, he protects her, he fattens her, he provides what she needs. Just as God said, I gave you food, I gave you water, I protected you, I gave you energy, I gave you the strength that you needed for that entire period of time. But what happens along the way? Is it going to be first class? Is it going to be flying on jumbo jets and we just sit in first class, or social distance ourselves on a plane and we all just head off to a place in the Caribbean or someplace like Hawaii? Revelation 12:15 says, a serpent cast out his mouth, cast out of his mouth water as a flood after the woman, that he might cause her to be carried away by the flood. Now, if you're an airplane, if you're looking at all the physical things, if you're in an airplane, you know, flood's not gonna make a big deal. You look down and say, well, I'm glad we're up in an airplane. We're not gonna be worried about a flood. And why would Satan cast out a flood when you're flying in a plane? No, this isn't telling us that everything's going to be perfect and everything's going to be smooth. Tells us there's going to be trials, and it says Satan sends out a water as a flood, or out of his mouth water as a flood comes. But here comes God as an eagle giving his protection. It says verse 16, the earth helped the woman, and the earth opened up and swallowed the flood which the dragon cast out of his mouth. This means it's giving the indication that he's sending out a flood, and we'll talk about that word flood in a moment, but sending out a flood after them, and it sounds like they're on foot, and the earth opened up and swallowed this flood. So is it literally talking about water? Well, so many times there is a duality, just as it says wings of a great eagle, or the protection of as a hen or mother eagle gives to her children. Here we see the duality of flood. Exodus 14:1 tells us, the Lord spoke to Moses saying, speak to the children of Israel that they may turn and encamp before Pithoroth, between Migdol and the sea, over before you encamp by the sea. For Pharaoh will say to the children of Israel, they are entangled in the land, and the wilderness has shut them in. He says, Pharaoh's going to get excited because he's going to say, they're trapped. They can't go anywhere. And I will harden Pharaoh's heart, and he shall follow after them. Now, the children of Israel leaving Egypt, they're being led out by God, and armies are following them. They're being led, but they're being chased. And he said, I will be honored upon Pharaoh and upon his host, and the Egyptians may know that I am the Lord. And they did so. And it was told the king of Egypt that the people fled, and the heart of Pharaoh and his servants was turned against the people. And they said, why have we done this, that we have been that we have let Israel go from serving us? Do we see the symbolism here, or comparison? It says this king, and we know that Egypt represents sin, and who would the king of sin represent? Who's the one who is the author of sin? Well, the one who knows he has a short time and is going to be attacking at the very end, it is going to send armies after, or flood after, the people of God. Verse 6, it said, he made ready his chariot, he took his people with him, and he took 600 chosen chariots and chariots of Egypt, captains over every one of them. Sounds like a flood of an army. And again, sometimes that analogy is used as armies being of a flood. The Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh the king, and he pursued after the children of Israel, and the children went out with a high hand. But the Egyptians pursued after them, and the horses and chariots and Pharaoh's and horsemen, his army, overtook them, being encamped by the sea. And when Pharaoh drew near, the children of Israel lifted up their eyes and beheld the Egyptians marched after them, and they were sore afraid, and the children of Israel cried out unto the Lord. Now, we have this to read. We have this as a way and a source of building faith. And we know, yes, they were caught in a position. We'd say they're in a tight spot. They were against the sea. The armies were against them. And they thought, that's it. After seeing all the miracles that God performed, and after seeing God deliver them in so many different ways, they went back to, well, we're not going to have protection. We're done for. And so when God tells us that this Satan is going to bring his wrath upon his people, and he's going to come after them instead of flood after them, when we're fleeing and when we see these things, we don't have to fear. We don't have to wonder, is God really going to be there? It will be evident that God is there. And the faith and the trust that we have to follow God completely will lead us to that protection as the children of Israel had. Verse 11, it says, they said to Moses, because there were no graves in Egypt, have you brought us out here into the wilderness to die? Wherefore have you dealt with us in this way to carry us out forth from Egypt? Is it not the word that we did tell you in Egypt to leave us alone that we could serve the Egyptians? No, thanks. Don't take us out of Egypt. Don't bring us out of slavery. We'd rather just stay here and be slaves. For it had been better for us to serve the Egyptians than that we should die in the wilderness. They looked at their freedom and what God was doing in delivering them as being in a worse position than being in slavery. But what they were in slavery to was themselves, their own mind and their thinking. Are we going to do the same? Or will we trust in God when God says, when it comes time to deliver you, when it comes time to remove God's people from what is going to happen on this earth, are you going to trust? Verse 13, Moses said to the people, fear not, stand still and see the salvation of the Lord. That was exciting as a child watching the Ten Commandments movie. It's exciting thinking about that being something that was actual and real, and that God said he would deliver them. But to fear not, stand still, see the salvation of the Lord. And God says, I'm going to open up the earth and swallow the flood that went after his people. Verse 14, the Lord shall fight for you. Do you believe that? Do you trust that God says when he will fight for you, not just when we flee, not just during the great tribulation, do you believe that God will fight for you now, that he is there and that he will protect you, he will fight for you? The Lord shall fight for you, and you shall hold your peace. The Lord said to Moses, wherefore cry to me? He said, speak to the children of Israel that they go forward. He said, tell them to keep moving. And of course, they went, wait a minute, we can't, there's water. He said, but if you lift your rod and stretch your hand out over the sea and divide it, the children of Israel shall go on dry land through the midst of the sea. And I, behold, I will harden the hearts of the Egyptians and shall follow them. Or they shall follow them. And I will get honor upon Pharaoh and upon his host and upon his chariots and upon his horsemen. He allowed the Egyptians to follow them. It was a test. He was testing them. He still wanted to know over and over, are you going to trust me? Are you going to follow me? The Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord when I have gotten honor upon Pharaoh and upon his chariots, upon his horsemen. And the angel of the Lord, which went before the camp of Israel, removed and went behind them. And the pillar of cloud went before their face and stood behind them. And it came between the camp and the Egyptians and the camp of Israel, the cloud it was a cloud of darkness to them, but it gave light by night to these, so that no one came near the other all night. He said he kept them separated, them in a cloud of darkness and them having enough light to get through the evening. So God separated the Egyptians and the Israelites. Verse 21, and Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the Lord caused the sea to come back by a strong east wind all that night, to go back, and he made the sea dry land, and the waters were divided. He didn't just open the sea instantly and they went through. He opened the sea and they went all night long. They were divided from the Egyptians. They still weren't allowed to get to them. But this drying out of the land was overnight. The children of Israel went into the midst of the sea upon dry ground, and the waters were a wall to them on the right hand and on the left. It wasn't up to their knees, like some have portrayed. While it wasn't really a major crossing, it was just knee deep. No, it says there was a wall to them. It went up on both sides. And the Egyptians, it says, pursued and went in after them in the midst of the sea, even Pharaoh's horses, chariots, and horsemen. Says they went in after them. There's a faith tester. It seemed like it was going to be close, especially if you were at the back of the line, that here come the Egyptians. It came to pass that in the morning watch, the Lord looked into the host of the Egyptians through the pillar of fire and of the cloud, and troubled the host of the Egyptians, meaning he stirred them up, he disillusioned them, and took off their wheels. Their wheels fell off of their chariots, and that they drove them heavily, so that the Egyptians said, "Let us flee from the face of Israel, for the Lord fights for them." They said, "We realize this isn't normal that all of our wheels have fallen off the chariots." Maybe one or two, but an army losing the wheels off their chariots. He said, "The Lord fights for them against the Egyptians." They could see that this was God's battle, that he was the one fighting for the children of Israel. Verse 26, the Lord said to Moses, "Stretch out your hand over the sea, and the waters may come again unto the Egyptians and upon the chariots and upon the horsemen." Moses stretched forth his hand over the sea, and the sea returned to its strength, or to his strength, when the morning appeared. And the Egyptians fled against it, and the Lord overthrew the Egyptians in the midst of the sea. The waters returned and covered the chariots and the horsemen and all the host of Pharaoh that came into the sea after them, and there remained not so much as one. All of them were destroyed. Now, in the end time, when God says he will take his people and protect them in a place of safety, she's taken to her place. Satan is going to cast out a flood after her, and it says the earth opened up and swallowed them and swallowed the flood and protected those people. Again, is history going to repeat itself in the same way? Is it armies that are following after us? Is it the armies of this world that are led by Satan? We will see. But God will once again protect his people. They will be carried on eagle's wings, just like the children of Israel were. Now, that doesn't mean jumbo jets. It means by the wings of eagles, as God protected the children of Israel on the wings of eagles. Mark 13, verse 18, I want to read from the King James Version. Mark 13, verse 18 is our final verse. Mark 13, and in verse 18, it says, "Pray that your flight..." Now, again, you can't get too excited and say, see, it's a flight. "Pray that your flight," or your fleeing, your escaping, "may not be in the winter." So God says, pray that you're not going to flee in the winter. "For in those days, there will be great tribulation, such as not been since the beginning of the creation of God, created until this time, nor ever shall be. Unless the Lord has shortened those days, no flesh would be saved." He said it's going to get so bad that man would destroy himself off the face of the earth. But that's not going to be what takes place. He said, "For the elect's sake, whom he chose," the elect, the called out, the chosen, the elect's sake whom he chose, those days will be shortened. So the elect, the woman, the church, which is his bride, will be protected, will be nourished, and will be fed, and they will be delivered on the wings of eagles by God himself.